Hi, this is Lesbian Nation. The music you heard was from the island of Bali, which is another nation entirely. You remember last spring, I read a letter from Jane Alpert, which was subsequently printed in various newspapers around the country and in Ms. Magazine. It was a letter from the underground, and it spoke about Jane's life in the underground and her changing politics, and gave a discussion of theories of matriarchy. This year, Off Our Backs, a Washington-based feminist newspaper, printed a response from women in the Weather Underground. And that's been circulating in New York, but unfortunately not very widely. Copies of Off Our Backs have reached New York, and they've been bought up at Labrys bookstores as soon as they were ordered. So for the benefit of you who don't get around to Labrys, who are living out in Jersey or whatever, I'm going to read the letter from the Weather Underground, and sometime later, possibly in October, I'll be having further discussion on theories of matriarchy and whatever other topics these letters provoke. Anyway, here's the letter from the Weather Underground. There aren't any names signed to it, but I understand from people who know better than I do that it's quite authentic. Dear sisters, we, women of the Weather Underground, having lived as fugitives in the U.S. for more than 3 years, are writing to open up our thinking and practice to the rest of the women's movement. Over the past several months, we have been working on a collective letter to you to begin to bridge the space between us. Jane Alpert's letter accelerated this process. Underground communication is a long, drawn-out process. The writing of this letter has been a collective effort by women in many parts of the country, an attempt to synthesize our views and to reflect the differences that shape them. Among us, there are great variations of personal history, class, regional movement and non-movement pasts, and a range of opinion. The purpose of this letter is to mark a change, to commit ourselves to the cause of women. We believe that the struggle against sexism demands the destruction of the American state, and that the immediate and personal nature of sexism requires struggle against men who enforce that oppression as well as its institutions. Since going underground, we have never publicly committed ourselves to the right and duty of women to rebel, to the revolutionary content of women's demands, and to the profound feminist critique of Western culture. As communists, we know we can criticize our practice without repudiating or denying our past. We intend also in this letter to share some of our purpose and our experience as women underground. Since going underground, there have been few times that we have communicated our internal process. The risk of revealing too much about ourselves to the state is ever present. But we also felt an urgent need to overcome these difficulties and share our lives with our sisters above ground. The nature of the unity among us is the secret thread of clandestine organization. This is what the state is searching out. We expect to be living underground for many years and know that we must build with care, understanding that we are responsible for each other's lives. In this context, we felt both angered and saddened at Jane Alpert's betrayal of information that could endanger the safety of other fugitives. Pieces of information, links, style, hints, which in and of themselves appear to lead nowhere, are interpreted by the state in the whole framework of their data, accumulating over years from their grand juries and the extensive surveillance of the Nixon administration. Each piece of the puzzle is gradually filled in, not by a sudden revelation, but as one fact after another trickles in, leading to a picture of a whole. The cost is the freedom of many people, since no one lives in isolation. Jane's revealing information about specific people to our enemy, the state, cannot be justified. However, we recognize the need for a critical look at our history and our present practice, and to acknowledge our debt to the women's movement. We've tried to set forth what we have been trying to accomplish without overusing the benefit of hindsight. We keep re-examining and reinterpreting the period 1969 through 70, both because it was so decisive in each of our lives and because it is our image at that time which is so stamped on people's memory. We have reread all our old leaflets and articles about women recently. Some of it stands, some of it doesn't. 3 years ago, we denied the legitimacy of white women's demands. Although we have been assaulted, underpaid, brainwashed, aborted, raped like women everywhere, we, and the left as a whole, did not recognize that women's demands for power over their own lives is fundamental to any revolution we would care to make. At that time, we were primarily involved in supporting Third World liberation struggles. The Provisional Revolutionary Government of South Vietnam had been declared in spring 69, and a full military and political victory for the Vietnamese people began to take shape. In the face of the PRG's gains, the U.S. began the 69 escalation of B-52 bombings and chemical warfare throughout Indochina. In the U.S., black resistance against racism challenged the foundations of U.S. society. Black parents and children battled for community control over their schools in New York City. Freedom for Third World political prisoners was raised as a demand. The fear of armed black revolution unleashed a systematic campaign by the government to destroy the most visible militant Third World organizations and to imprison, immobilize, or murder their leaders. White women who had been active in the struggles against the war and in support of blacks turned their attention to the history of their own oppression, separated from men to create space for this exploration. It was out of this that the feminist movement grew. Without an independent feminist force, the significant accomplishments of consciousness raising, analysis of sexism and the roots of male power, abortion reform, control of our bodies, affirmative action around equal rights, the shattering of women's chains and shackles would not have occurred. At the same time, Third World women were opening up similar questions in their own terms, attempting to resolve their struggle for leadership and a culture of equality within a whole national movement for the survival and unity of their peoples. During this period, we were time and again in gatherings of the left or planning for actions, demonstrations, where women were polarized. It seemed we were either primarily anti-sexist, believing that sexism was the central issue to tackle before any revolutionary development could go on, or primarily anti-racist, and argued that we could not divide and weaken the movement at a time when the fight for life in the black community was so urgent, and when black resistance was not consistently supported in action by white people. Longtime sisters fell on different sides of the split, and it continues to divide us now. The women who pushed the primacy of sexism came out of the anti-war movement, or called themselves anti-imperialists. Many of us SDS women identified deeply with women's struggles, having been in SDS women's rap groups and caucuses, and felt part of the women's movement. This was not the first time in history that women divided around priorities. After the Civil War, a movement grew to guarantee blacks the right to vote. Many women wanted to include in the 14th or 15th Amendment a guarantee to vote regardless of sex as well as race, while others argued that raising the issue of sex would defeat the amendment. When blacks faced the imminent danger of being brought back under some system of de facto slavery. Contradictions always arise among people who are oppressed in the process of building a revolution. These can serve the enemy and must be recognized and resolved when they arise in our movement. American society rests on racism and the enslavement of women, and on dividing people through fear, hatred, and a glorification of narrow self-interest. If women come to deny the Attica brothers their full place as warriors, their beautiful humaneness in the liberation of the prison yard, then we are turned against our comrades while our enemies laugh. We make responsibility for increasing the polarization and the contradictions. We both denied the revolutionary importance of developing feminist politics and made our own political choice into an oppressive standard by which we judged other women. There will always be arguments about priorities, and those will continue to move us forward. But for us, the basis for struggling has changed. We cannot make a value judgment about people's oppression. Which is more important, or far-reaching, or pervasive, or painful? It is the wrong question. We cannot liberate ourselves in some vacuum of our self-conception. The great majority of women in the world are bowed down by the questions of survival for themselves and their children's self-determination in their daily lives. The liberation of women cannot be realized while the U.S. empire remains the main consumer of the world's food, resources, and energy. Our movement will have to take on the questions of state power. That is why our future is tied to the liberation of the Third World, for it is their struggles which, in our lifetime, have shaken the grip of empire. The fight by black people for their freedom, from Rosa Parks in Montgomery, Alabama, led all of us to understand the enemy and how to fight, and to become aware of our oppression. Our feminist politics must embrace women of other cultures, learn from them the way they see the world, support in action their fight for liberation of their people from repression, cultural penetration, and genocide. Our commonality as women can offer a base to build trust. Here's a quote. In the past, I don't care how poor this white woman was. In the South, she still felt like she was more than us. In the North, I don't care how poor or rich this white woman has been. She still felt like she was more than us. But coming to the realization of the thing, her freedom is shackled in chains to mine, and she realizes for the first time that she is not free until I am free. Fannie Lou Hamer. Looking back from here on the split between the feminist movement and the New Left, it has been a long road to try to integrate anti-imperialist politics on which our underground was founded. Our understanding of the world and our own lives is in continuous process of change. As conditions change, we have to invite and nurture one another's growth. As one woman wrote in a letter to another, since I have been underground, I have been learning about our history, about Prudence Crandall, the Grimke sisters, Sojourner Truth, along with many other women. Sometimes it strikes me how so many women know more about our sisters who made history in generations before ours than those many women who fought in the struggles of the 1960s, the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement. I guess it's not so strange. The 60s is so close. The discovery of the influence of men in our lives made many women question whether anything they believed was really their own belief. And coming to see how pervasive sexism is in the world made many see everything in terms of sexism. So the struggles that happened in the 60s were questioned. What did they mean for women, for the women who had been in them? I get so tied to that history, though, which took me underground and led me to where I am, like a tree with roots. Sometimes I have heard people talk as if all that came before was bad. Yet for me, those years are a touchstone for what I have become. The truths in them are a basis for my understanding much of what happens in the world. The wrongs are a platform from where my feminism has grown. I feel like it's so important to understand that just because we were influenced in many ways by men, it would be wrong to say that we didn't understand anything for ourselves. We have to trust ourselves more than that. Our struggle for freedom stretches way ahead of us, and oppression continually has to be fought, oppression and liberation will coexist in our lives. And also that what we and so many other women did to try and end the suffering of the Vietnamese people is very much a part of the history of the women's movement. Sometimes it's painful to hear that not included as part of history, because after all, it was made by women. And more, it seems to me that the women's movement has to be about many things that women do. There is no issue that is not a women's issue, for we are about ordering a new society. There is no injustice that should not be taken on by women, for we are about humanity. The women in the weather collectives were deeply affected by the arguments of the separatists. Women continued to work and fight within sight and sound of each other. We were working to develop a conception out of our own needs of a revolutionary woman. In 1968-69, each of us was changed in her conception of herself as a woman, as wife, intellectual, coward, or empty vessel. I remember Diana especially on the SDS trip to Cuba to meet with the Vietnamese in the summer of 69. Since her death in the townhouse explosion in March 1970, I have grown to hate the superficial, condescending psychoanalyses of her life, those by radicals as much as the Daily News variety. How do you write the making of a revolutionary woman? Not as mere victim of a man, product of father or lover. Maybe begin with fragments. She wept plenty, same as all of us. Also, she demanded honest love. Our women's group met every day on the boat back from Cuba, and I learned from her. She translated for us, up early every morning after a late-night party to prepare for the day's Spanish lessons. Special care to make friends with the Cuban women, meet their children, reminiscing about the children she had taught in a Guatemalan school. Beautiful, strong arms, an indefatigable worker in the hold of the ship, and never without a certain amount of ironic humor. Ideas that seem quite natural now were each a battle to be fought. That women could meet together, conceive, and carry out a demonstration, that we could be free of the couple form, be our own person, that we could make love with our sisters, that we could form a women's militia out of our own women's energy, anger, and joy. If we had not been so focused on our internal process, we could have allied with other women who were transforming their lives. We had radical ideas about monogamy, which we saw as isolating and a weakening form for women. But this became a lack of realism about what such a line meant for most women as a demand, and became a way of judging other women's lives and choices. At the time, the urgency to become new people right away gave our criticisms a hammering relentlessness. We developed a vision of women as fighters, pushed by the existence of a separate women's movement to define a revolutionary woman, not just a revolutionary. And we looked for women to emulate out of our past and from other countries. The women of Vietnam were our models. We had met with them, Pham Thi Kien, Tu, Thanh Tra, heard of their battle stories, and saw them gaining freedom in the process of their people's war for independence. What was most important to us was that they were able to take part in a prolonged military battle and endure great hardships. We had single-minded conception of a woman guerrilla as fighter only. Through the last 3 years of building a community of opposition to the U.S. government, we have come to appreciate the many sides of women revolutionaries. The details of our survival have taken much of our time, all of our women's weapons. The holding together and nurturance of our community has meant calling on every woman's potential. From our diversity comes collective strength. Determination and skill come out of the death of political and cultural experiences. Women resist and are brave in the most ordinary-seeming situations, on a welfare line, after being told that medical benefits are going to be cut, on a street late at night helping another sister who was being harassed, as a mother demanding that the hospital stop experimenting with sterilization on her daughters, one sister to another trying to convince her to stop shooting up because it is giving the man a victory, swallowing up her life. sisters who didn't know who we were, giving fugitives cover and support when we needed it most. Struggles for survival. Ours was one of them. I think it has to be difficult for people to be violent, to go to war. How can we say we aren't afraid? What do our lives mean to us and the lives of others? We love life, but you've got to be violent and go to war if it's necessary. But what you can't lose in that kind of situation is your sensitivity. And that's signed Heidi Santa Maria. Although our purely military conception of women revolutionaries was too narrow, we believe that armed struggle is an essential dimension in a movement which is facing a cruel and murderous government. When the New Morning Statement appeared in December 1970, it was misunderstood as a repudiation, especially by weather women, of armed struggle. We meant it to be an analysis of the error of militarism, which includes the idealization of violence, an exaggerated emphasis on the use of arms to the exclusion of mass struggle, coming out of a sense of powerlessness. We believe that armed struggle can be, must be, humane. After the townhouse explosion, we stepped back to look at our approach to armed action. Now we feel a tremendous responsibility, even in the smallest action, to take great care in the methods we use. A belief in our own instincts has become one guideline, getting closer to the ground. One sister writes of an early experience. The first time I was involved in an armed action, I literally felt no fear at all. There I was, risking jail or death. Yet no bad dreams, no doubts, no slightest tremor of the hand. When I was arrested, all I felt was a little sad. It's strange, if you put your hand in the fire and don't feel any pain at all, you can really get hurt. You want to relieve pain if you've got it, but it also warns you that something is the matter, so you value it. I think fear is the same way. It's like a body's early warning system. If I had felt fear and valued it, that experience might have been different. I certainly would have been more careful. That's why, when much later I participated in a small but successful action, the fear that went through my body and mind filled me with the most amazing sense of liberation. The basis of trust over time is laid by our practice. The choice of what to do is never made lightly. Each detail is examined many times over. Our actions have been against the widening of the Indochina War into Cambodia and Laos, and the bombing of Hanoi, in support of Black and Latin people in prison, on trial, in struggle. At this stage, they have had mainly symbolic value, in retaliation for the crimes committed by the state. A way of cutting through the myth of impenetrability of government. We believe that the continued existence of an underground shows that America is deeply divided within itself. Since we've been underground, each of us has come to feel the need for women working and living together, the lesson of the women's movement. This wasn't always true. In the first year, precarious and unsure of our survival, internal contradictions between the women and the men were less important than the battle with the state. At this time, many other women were taking the space to work with one another apart from men. We saw one movement group after another fly apart because of sexism. And partly out of this process, the women's movement grew in anger. Yet we wanted to cohere our organization. Both to stay free in the face of government pursuit and out of our political unity, women and men, around the building of the underground. We realize that many women distrust us because we work with men. To some, this puts into question not only our loyalties to other women, but our very womanness. But the last few years, we have both learned and suffered from our brothers in our family, struggled with and been passive to them, loved and been alienated and fought with them. We claim the integrity of our choice to work with them and do not intend to either defend or reject them. So it is within the context of a mixed organization that we have fought for space for ourselves. It started slowly, working together on a woman's action sustaining friendships between women who saw each other rarely, supporting each other in our daily lives, dealing with sexist practices as a group of sisters, developing women's houses, taking time to study herstory. Over time, we have built women's collectives, pushed by our growing commitment to define our feminist politics apart from the brothers. When we work together, a few of us women, there seem to be so many forms that we can use to express ourselves, enabling the essence of what we are saying and feeling to come across. Culturally, just the things we create together are important. There are many gives and takes between us that are subtle and important. We often understand what each other is saying, even when it's only partly in words. We are aware of each other's presence, and whether it is troubled or full. We won't let too many hours go by before a locked door gets open to examine what's inside. A growing collectivity, I guess, is what it is, with importance placed on each of the individuals within it. Recently, we met to discuss proposals circulated among our women's groups to compare our development throughout the country. The very process of writing this paper has pulled us closer together. We are formalizing the beginning of an ongoing women's community in the underground. We live in many ways, mothers, lesbians, with men, with older women, or alone, and are as varied as women anywhere. The growth of our women's community has taken each of us through changes, and perhaps it is felt in the poetry, art, and music that we are creating. We look at each other in amazement, realizing how much it is possible for each one of us to grow, and that together we are part of giving birth to a new women's culture. Women have done illegal work as long as our history, for it is part of our survival. We look back to the women who have done clandestine work in past years, to witches, Harriet Tubman, Emma Goldman, to Tanya, and many, many more. It is their tradition we want to carry on as we build the underground. We hope this letter can open up, with sisters, a discussion about the role of women underground. How to talk to one another is something we will have to figure out together. We read women's newspapers in many parts of the country, and we'll look for letters from you. We hope to reach across this space. For centuries, women have spoken to one another in strange tongues to protect themselves from their enemies. There is invisible, spun fine as a spider, woman's web in the late summer morning, the diamond-strong thread which connects us in sisterhood. Women of the Weather Underground. And that's in Off Our Backs, the July-August issue. If you want to get a copy of it, let's see if I can find the address here. Send to Off Our Backs Incorporated. Even radical feminist newspapers have to incorporate themselves. 1724 20th Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 2009. That's 1724 20th Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C. Okay, that was Lesbian Nation, and I'll be back next week.